This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning, this is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Ewart, and coming up in this Friday sporting edition, a world first for the Pacific as Oceania Rugby unveils plans for a women's combine. PNG's bid for a team in the NRL gaining momentum and plenty of political will.
When two prime ministers come together to help get a game of rugby league on, that's a wonderful sign. And at the end of the journey, we should be in a very good position to put a very strong case forward.
And what's in the name? FIFA demands they take the Melanesia out of the revived Melanesian Cup competition.
Discrimination. You know, he told us that he discriminated. We need to open, revise the same competition, but they told us that you need to change the name.
Batik Bong, competitions manager for the Vanuatu Football Federation. We'll hear more from him on what is now the MSG Prime Minister's Cup later in the programme. First, though, it's not been a good week for the Papua New Guinea Football Association. On Monday, the national under-19 men's team were due to play a warm-up match in Brisbane ahead of the OFC Championship in Tahiti, but the game was called off, apparently because of visa problems. In the meantime, the furore over the national women's team is being ramped up on social media. Fans and commentators alike are bemused by the FA's decision to relieve coach Nicola Demain of her duties and sideline 10 players a matter of weeks after the team won the OFC Championship and secured a place in next February's World Cup qualification playoffs. Now, to add to the confusion, two scheduled warm-up matches against Singapore in Port Moresby have been called off. A week ago, PNG FA President John Caponato told us the changes to the team and the coaching setup were being made on the advice of the OFC and were aimed at improving the team's chances of actually securing a World Cup place. Meanwhile, those players who are still on board are in camp and led by a rather confused captain in Megan Gnemba, who has thrown her weight behind her now former coach.
We asked the PNG FA and they told us the players, some of them were injured, and they not really cut them, but they just put them aside. Whenever they recover, they're going to come back and join the team. The 10 players, they're not out there in this 40 women's team to make the final team before February for these qualifiers. And the coach, they said the OFC, they want a qualified coach to take us through these qualifiers in February.
As captain of the team most recently, what do you make of that? I mean, did you or any of the players know that this was coming? Did you have a problem with the coach?
The coach is okay with us, so we just follow what they told us. Because of the country's name, we're coming back to play with the national team.
All the discussion that's going on in the PNG media at the moment and on social media as well, I mean, how is that affecting you and the players? Because you were on a high after winning the OFC Championship and you know you're going forward to the World Cup qualifier, which will be a first for the Pacific. And then suddenly this storm of protest from people are saying, why are the PNG FA doing this? If it ain't broke, why fix it? Seems to be the message.
Yeah, that's what's going on in the country right now. But as for me, there's lots of media and all this, so I just don't want to talk. I just want to keep to myself because they told me to do this, do that. And right now I'm just confused and I'm in the camp training with the team.
The suggestion that's been put to me by the PNG FA president, John Caponato, is that they took advice from OFC, who suggested that as well as you've done in winning the OFC Championship, the team was not performing to its optimum level, that you can do better. Do you believe that? And do you think, therefore, change is necessary?
They said that. And if they bring new coach, I don't know. But our coach was, she's still the best. I believe if she stays, she will bring us to that level they expect. But she leaves, so they decide to get a new coach. So I don't know. Whoever comes in, we're going to work with him or her and trying to get what PNGFA want, going to this World Cup standard.
But is there not a concern for you and your teammates that, okay, they might bring another coach in and that person might just make the difference and you might win that World Cup place, which of course you would very much love to do. But on the other hand, it might create a lot of disruption and uncertainty and it might actually weaken your chances.
Yeah, it is going to be new to us. So are we going to work well with him? We'll try to give our best and work with him to achieve what we're looking for.
You were due to play Singapore twice and the first of those games was tomorrow. Those games are now off, but yeah, there is a possibility of you playing Solomon Islands in a friendly. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I heard from the assistant coach. He said we're going to play a friendly against Solomon Islands.
But you don't know why the Singapore games have been called off?
No.
But suffice it to say, you had two international games coming up, which I'm sure you would have loved to have played to build on the momentum that you established in Fiji at the OFC Championship. And now you're in camp, but currently you don't know when your next game is going to be. Have I got that right?
No, I don't know what's the next game going to be. They just informed us that we're going to play Solomon Island, one friendly that's all. But apart from that, I don't know anything apart from that.
And how would you sum up morale amongst the group at the moment?
They need more training, the new players, to catch up to that standard where some of us were just recently returned from Fiji. They need to train hard to match the standard. So all of us going to be in one standard, so ready to play those international friendlies, because international friendlies are very tough and challenging.
But as far as their state of mind is concerned, they are still positive about what the team can achieve in light of everything that's been going on around them?
About what's going on, the team, we are positive about we can achieve what we want. We can give a good result apart from what's happening in the country.
Megan Gunemba, captain of Papua New Guinea's national women's soccer team, on the line from Port Moresby and putting a brave face on what is a very confused and, many would argue, rather unnecessary situation. Now, this month is Women in Rugby Month, and Oceania Rugby is marking the occasion with the launch of a world-first rugby combine for women. The aim is to accelerate development for female players in the Pacific and create a pathway for the best talent in the islands to secure contracts in Australia's Super W competition. And the new initiative puts women on par with the men in the region, for whom a similar talent spotting combine was launched in 2018 before going into abeyance at the height of the pandemic. To tell us more, we're joined by Erin Hatton, who's Oceania Rugby Sport for Development and Partnerships Manager. Erin, good morning. Welcome to Pacific Beat.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about how this combine will work. I mean, for those players who are chosen to take part, what do they have to do to get these precious contracts in Super W?
Well, there's been 20 players identified, and they were identified out of the Oceania Rugby Women's Championships that took place in July in Auckland this year. There were four teams at that particular event, so Fiji, Samoa, Tonga and Papua New Guinea. Now, those that follow their rugby will know that the Fijiana and Drua have been part of Super W last year for the first time ever, and actually won that competition in their inaugural year, which has had a profound impact on girls and women in rugby in Fiji and the region. So this initiative is very much about trying to create a similar pathway and opportunity for high performance for some of the girls from those other nations. So 20 players from Samoa, Tonga and Papua New Guinea have been identified at that championship based on both their performance and their potential. They'll be coming to a combine camp on the Gold Coast in September. And at that camp, they'll go through a series of testing. They'll go through a series of coaching sessions, but they'll do a whole lot of work both on and off the field to essentially give them some benchmarks for world rugby against women in rugby in this region, but also rate each of those players. We will have coaches from Super W franchises attend the combine as well. So between the assessments and the data and meeting the athletes and their own observations of the athletes at the combine, they will then put their hands up for those players that they're eager to have as part of their franchises.
So, from my understanding of what you said, Fijiana, because they've clearly been so successful, as you say, in their debut season in Super W, they're being left essentially to their own devices. The focus here is on Tonga, Samoa and PNG. And I'm wondering, therefore, I mean, are we moving towards potentially a women's version of Moana Pacifica, if you like, and a second Pacific team in Super W?
Well, each of these players will actually be separated into the different franchises. So absolutely the intention is to create pathways that haven't existed, especially for those girls who live on island where perhaps the level of rugby reaches a certain point and they really need greater high performance exposure. So it's absolutely providing that opportunity. I think this is absolutely the first step in this process to have girls, a couple of girls spread out into different teams that are in existence in Australia. We all have lots of visions and ideas about what might be possible down the track of whether something like a Moana Pacifica competing in a super competition would also be possible. So it's absolutely something that we're looking at and we'll consider as we see how this rolls out and how successful it is.
The focus up to now does seem to have been on women players from the Pacific maybe coming into Super W here in Australia. Clearly Fijiana have done that as a team and been very successful. Now we're talking about players from Tonga, Samoa and PNG. What about New Zealand? Because clearly in terms of the men's event, the Fijian team is based in Australia, the Moana Pacifica are based in Auckland. I mean, are New Zealand going to be involved in some way in developing the women's game and connecting with this combine?
So this combine has actually been supported wholly by Australian government through Pacific Oz Sport Program. So it is a partnership at this stage between Pacific Oz Sport, Oceania Rugby, World Rugby and Rugby Australia. And that's where it's been seeded from and where it's been born. So certainly this year that's the way that it will progress. However, we absolutely see the opportunities for connection with New Zealand, and they're the sorts of discussions that need to be had between the Australian Super management and Moana. But there's also opportunities within New Zealand in their own senior level competitions for girls and women based in New Zealand. But look, all of these sorts of things are on the table. And Nikki Ponsford is World Rugby's high performance manager for the women's game. And they're exactly the sorts of discussions that we've had. And they're the sorts of discussions that she started to have with Moana Pacifica as well. We're really excited about the potential for competition across the whole region and across the ditch. The women's game is absolutely emerging and starting to blossom. So the potential is really endless.
And of the 20 players who will take part in the combine, I mean, is it possible, potentially, that all 20 of them could secure contracts if they're deemed to be good enough?
It's unlikely. We are very much hoping to have at least 6 players placed, and we'll see beyond that. So as you can imagine, it's incredibly important that each of the girls is at the standard of their peers, and that's for both a performance perspective but especially for a safety perspective. It's a huge investment, obviously, so the girls will come into be with those teams and be embedded with them for an almost 5-month period. So a long way from home, and the scholarships will be offered to those players that reach the required standards and potential and are really being sought after by the Super W teams as well.
And what are the...
We would hope to increase those numbers in the next couple of years as well.
And one other knock-on effect, which I think you're aiming for through this combine, is to raise the standards of the national teams from Tonga, Samoa, and particularly PNG, of course, had a pretty tough time in the recent Oceania Championship. So there could be all sorts of spin-offs from this.
Absolutely. So, look, the objectives are absolutely to raise the standard of the national teams of each of those countries. But it's also about providing, you know, an opportunity for that high performance development for individual players. Now, sometimes they might not end up being in national teams, but it's also about the capacity and learning that they take back into those rugby environments back on island as well. So we're very much hoping that those girls that go into a franchise will learn an incredible amount about the game on the field, but we're very much hoping that they'll also have opportunities to, for example, work as development officers in and around rugby whilst they're in Australia, so in that downtime when they're not training. And they're the sort of skills that will just be invaluable taking back when they go home. Additionally, the combine itself has incredible value for learning, and not only players, but we do have a couple of female coaches that are coming in to shadow, learn and be mentored during the combine process as well. So really looking at trying to maximise this opportunity for long-term development for each of the island nations that are involved.
It's going to be fascinating to see how it all plays out on the Gold Coast later this month. Aaron Hutton, thank you very much indeed for joining us on Pacific Beat this morning. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me, and happy Women in Rugby Month.
Absolutely. Aaron Hutton there, Oceania Rugby Sport for Development and Partnerships Manager. It is indeed Women in Rugby Month, and Oceania marking the occasion with that launch of a world first rugby combine for women players. I mean, we'll touch base with that combine when it gets underway, and I think in a week or so's time on the Gold Coast here in Australia. Pacific Beat here on ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Hewitt. It's the Friday morning sporting edition. And a bid by Papua New Guinea to have a team in Australia's National Rugby League competition by the end of the decade is proving to be very popular in the corridors of power in both Port Moresby and Canberra. The Rugby League connection was very much in play a week ago when Prime Ministers Marape and Albanese stepped in to ensure that the PNG Hunters' homecoming match in the capital against Mackay actually went ahead. And Andrew Hill, the lead consultant on the NRL bid, says that level of political will has been reflected in a series of meetings and conversations over recent days. What the bid will eventually look like is still far from clear, and Mr. Hill says the process won't be rushed. Already, though, the possibility of Fiji being involved has been canvassed. The National Football Stadium in Moresby might just need to be made bigger, and there's a chance that a PNG NRL team might actually play at other yet-to-be-constructed venues around the country. And Andrew Hill says the impact on the PNG population would be profound.
It's definitely gathering momentum, and I think the opportunity to use rugby league as a vehicle, I think, is being appreciated. This bid has the power to unite and inspire a whole population. It's got the opportunity to really deepen relationships between the two governments. Certainly, the two prime ministers way back in Fiji, I think a well-documented discussion prior to PM Marape being re-elected. That was followed up with some correspondence between the two prime ministers. And of course, Minister Wong being in PNG meeting with various government bodies. I've been reassured by many people that Prime Minister Marape and Minister Tijenko has spoken about rugby league. And I've also been in Canberra meeting with Minister Conroy about the bid. So there's no doubt there is a very keen appetite to progress discussions on a government-to-government basis. And we want to be able to strengthen the relationship between the two countries using rugby league.
The nature of the bid as it stands is PNG wants to have a team in the NRL. But when the bid is finally tabled, is it still going to be a PNG bid? I know you've been to Cairns, for example, and that part of far north Queensland, they've been keen to get involved with PNG for a long number of years. And there's also been talk of possibly Fiji being involved.
Well, certainly the phone's rung hot over the last 4 weeks, which is, again, a great sign of the genuine view that this bid has got legs. What I would say from the very outset is that regardless of wherever the model lands, it is always going to be led by PNG. This is about bringing NRL content to PNG. At this stage, it's so early, we would be foolish not to be listening to the various proposals that people want to put in front of us. And then over the next 6 months, we can digest that information, understand where the opportunities lie, but also understand where the challenges are. We've made a commitment to the Prime Minister and to the people of PNG that we won't be rushing in. This isn't about spending a lot of money unnecessarily. This is about taking our time and having one good opportunity. Hopefully 2025, we'll be in a position where the Australian Rugby League Commission will be ready to make some decisions about the 18th team, and we'll take every bit of time we can to ensure PNG are leading the bid for the 18th team.
Is it fair to say, though, that you said the phones have been running hot, that one of those calls, or maybe more, has come from the Fiji NRL?
Yes, there has been some very informal conversations with our partners in the Pacific. And of course, over a period of time, we will discuss those opportunities with the relevant stakeholders from Fiji. And we'd be silly not to. We're very open-minded, and we analyse where we think we can get the right partnerships. But remembering, getting the NRL for PNG will always be at the forefront of our decision-making process.
What about location? Do you believe at this stage that it would be a sustainable model for that team to play all of its home games in PNG, or might it be a case of perhaps having two locations, which I guess is where someone like Cairns might come in?
It's a good question, Richard. I mean, certainly the infrastructure in the National Football Stadium is first class. The Prime Minister's 13 has played there, of course, the Rugby League World Cup. So the capacity of the stadium and the infrastructure of the stadium is there. Clearly, 15,000 might not be enough seats, and our challenge would be how we create more opportunities for people to watch the game. But there's no doubt games can be played at PNG, whether that's the whole season, whether it's providing opportunities for a partnership model, and perhaps also, you know, whether PNG in the future may have other infrastructure. Maybe in decades' time, there'd be a lovely stadium at Goroka or Kokopo or somewhere else. We just never know. But right at the moment, definitely the Santos Stadium could host many, many NRL games.
I recall when I last spoke to you about the bid, you basically said you were convinced that this could succeed, otherwise you wouldn't have taken on the role that you currently occupy in this process. And I'm guessing from what you've said so far, there's nothing really that's come along to change your mind on that. You really do believe this bid can succeed if it's gone about in the right way.
Absolutely, Richard. And I think certainly in the last week alone, there's been lots of examples that demonstrate the willingness to give this bid respect that it deserves and every opportunity to succeed. There are some great calibre of people on the board. And when two prime ministers come together to help get a game of rugby league on, that's a wonderful sign. And then that gets followed up by the foreign ministers of both countries meeting and talking about many things, of which rugby league was one. And the support from a corporate and community point of view is very important. This needs to be a team that brings the people of PNG together on a journey. It also needs to build on Australian business networks in PNG. And there are so many opportunities, if done right and not rushed. At the end of the journey, we should be in a very good position to put a very strong case forward.
Andrew Hill, former CEO of the Bulldogs and now lead consultant on Papua New Guinea's bid to have a team of their own in the NRL. Time to take a look at some of the stories making news around the Pacific this morning from a news perspective. We're going to start in Fiji. Kyle Evans is with me. And Kyle, the Electoral Amendment Bill, rather controversial, but it's got up.
That's right, yeah. So the bill amending the Electoral Act was passed in Parliament despite some fierce opposition. The Fiji Law Society, the Law Council of Australia, as well as the Fiji opposition MPs were among the voices to raise a fair few concerns. And the bill, as we heard yesterday, makes key changes to the Act by giving the electoral supervisor a broad range of powers to carry out what they think needs to be done to ensure a smooth election. So that includes being able to request information or documents that don't withstand any law that provides confidentiality, privilege or secrecy, and really under any pretext. So effectively, the person who oversees the electoral process has a lot more power, which in this case is going to be Muhammad Saneem. The opposition were very furious when it got up, saying such powers didn't exist anywhere else in the world and that would be used to intimidate people who participate in the electoral process, while the Attorney General told the Fiji Times that that the opposition was simply just trying to make excuses for an election it will eventually lose.
Yes. Papua New Guinea, the police admit they lack the manpower to fight money laundering. So what's the situation here?
Yeah, so this is a pretty concerning one as well. So authorities have admitted they lack the resources to investigate 5,000 cases of money laundering. And this was reported by the Post Courier, who spoke to the country's National Fraud and Anti-Corruption Acting Director. So he said the office has only 3 police officers and neither of them have sufficient investigative skills to work on these cases. Obviously, cases like these, they aren't built overnight. They take a lot of funding and effort to get off the ground. And in previous years, they've had up to 15 officers. So funding has obviously been slashed along the way, which is tough given the Bank of PNG currently has, you know, like I said, 5,000 cases of anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing, which are yet to be investigated.
I wonder how those numbers stack up against other countries around the region. Now to Vanuatu, the small matter of the Supreme Court ruling whether or not the dissolution of Parliament was constitutional.
Yeah, it feels like we've been talking about this one for a while now. So a hearing into the Supreme Court questioning the legality of a decision to dissolve Parliament finally takes place today. This, of course, happened right as PM Bob Loughman was set to face a motion of no confidence last month after a signatory from 27 now former opposition MPs. And according to RNZ, the opposition's lawyer will represent the case, then the Attorney General will speak, and the judge will give a decision immediately or adjourn it until next week. So that's according to the Assistant Deputy Private Secretary to Vanuatu's head of state, who was quoted.
I should be fascinated to see if we get an immediate decision. I think that will be a bit of a first. But anyway, it may happen. I suppose they do need to sort it out sooner rather than later. We shall see. We'll update you on that if there is an immediate decision later in the day. Carl, thanks very much indeed.
Thanks, Richard.
Carl Evans there with some of the news stories from around the region. You're with Pacific Beats here on ABC Radio Australia. It's the Friday morning sporting edition. And the pandemic has caused all sorts of problems to sport in the Pacific, with so many tournaments being called off, and that includes the OFC and the 19 Men's Championship, which was last played way back in 2018. Well, finally, it is back, with the first matches kicking off in Tahiti next week, when Solomon Islands play American Samoa and Cook Islands meet seven times winners New Zealand. The young All Whites will start as warm favourites, but there are two places up for grabs at the FIFA Under 20 World Cup in Indonesia next year, so at least one will go to an island team. To cast his eye over the contenders, we're joined by Matthew Nash from OFC, the Oceania Football Confederation. Matthew, good morning. Welcome to Pacific Beat.
Good morning, Richard. Nice to be on the show.
It's good to see this tournament back in action. I guess most of the players who were taking part the last time there was a championship, they would have only been 14 or 15 years old. So this really is the young generation. But clearly, we expect that New Zealand will be up there and quite likely to win the tournament. Looking at the Pacific Island teams, which ones do you think we should be looking out for?
Yeah, I mean, it is always hard to look past New Zealand. They've got a strong team with a host of players who are currently on the books with the Wellington Phoenix. But you do never know. That they recently played Fiji in a pre-tournament friendly here in Auckland, and they actually ended up drawing 1-1. So there's the teams, Fiji will take confidence from that, and all the other Pacific Island nations will definitely follow that lead, I imagine, feeling they can get a result against New Zealand. Tahiti as well, as hosts, historically have a good record as hosts. They've won it twice in their own backyard and were runners up 4 years ago. So they'll be confident they've got a good young group. And the Solomon Islands and Vanuatu and Papua New Guinea are always producing very strong talent. And Samoa have taken a rather novel pursuit of casting their eye beyond just their borders and bringing in some foreign-based talent that have got Samoan heritage, and they're feeling very confident as well. And you never know, that four-year gap means there's an unknown quantity to all the players from Tonga, Cook Islands, American Samoa. Who knows who might have been unearthed in that time?
American Samoa, I think, have been affected perhaps more than just about any other team in the Pacific. I can't remember the last time they played in any OFC competition, because they pulled out of a few because of COVID. And let's face it, their track record is not great. I mean, they're going to find it tough, aren't they, to hit the ground running at this tournament?
I think it'll be difficult on the pitch for them, but I think for them and for all the teams involved, just having all 11 member associations involved in a competition is a real boost for the region. I've been following sort of their progress in training and stuff on their Facebook pages, and all the boys just seem to be having the best time just getting to know each other and playing. It might be tough for them on the pitch, but I think in the long run, it'll be really good for them to just get back out there and get that competitive feel and get amongst each other and have a good time.
Now, there's some interesting individual names. We have Bartram Suri's son, Alden, playing for Solomon Islands. Jay Herdman, who's in the New Zealand side, is the son of the Canadian coach, John Herdman. But the one that I guess really stands out, even to the casual soccer watcher, is the name of Cahill. Tim Cahill, ex-Socceroo, ex-Everton player. His son, Kaya, is going to be playing for Samoa. That's an interesting twist.
Yeah, Kaya is. I actually had the pleasure of speaking to Kaya the other day. He's a lot like his dad. He's very, very driven, very, very excited to be playing. He's even wearing the number 17 shirt that his dad wore throughout his career. I think he's going to be an interesting name to keep an eye on throughout the competition. You know, he's played football in Spain and in England, and he's currently in Qatar, where his dad is currently working. His dad played in this competition himself when he was very young, 14 years old. So I'm sure there's plenty of advice he's been giving him about how to handle the pressure. But he seemed really excited about the opportunity to be back over in the Pacific and getting close to his roots and his Samoan heritage, as he's, you know, he'll be a little bit detached from that growing up all around the world, following his dad into America and everywhere he's played. So yeah, and really exciting to see all of these young talents who's following in their familial footsteps and getting to play for their nations. I'm sure they're going to have a very proud and poignant experience in Tahiti.
And I guess the important aspect of this is that the rules changed, 20 or so years ago now, which allowed Tim Cahill eventually to play for Australia, when having played for Samoa as a kid, he almost effectively screwed up his international chances of playing for the Socceroos. But with his son, he could carry on playing for Samoa at all age levels, but still play for another country later on because of the way the rules stand now, if he chose to do so, of course, if he was good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe there's been a recent shift in those rules, which makes it a little more flexible, which is, I think, the right move with young players. And he now gets the chance to experience his this with Samoa. And if he goes on to want to represent another nation, have that opportunity. I think I've seen across the world in other nations that recently famous examples are teams like Ghana, who have called up players who are based and played for England or other nations, Spain even, and they get to play for the country of their parents. And I think it's the move in the right direction. And I think a lot of the teams at this tournament have looked beyond their boundaries. Samoa aren't alone. Fiji have got a talented young lad who played his football in England. And the Cook Islands have a goalkeeper, I believe, who's based in New Zealand. So I think it's good for the area because you get this level playing field on above the board, everyone lifting each other up. So hopefully it will be a success for Kaya and all the players at the competition who are in that situation.
Well, we look forward to the kickoff in Tahiti in the middle of next week. The OFC Under 19 Men's Championship is going to be interesting to see who get those World Cup places. But Matthew, thanks very much indeed for joining us. We appreciate your time.
No worries. Thank you.
Matthew Nash there from OFC, the Oceania Football Confederation, and the opening games, just to repeat, Solomons versus Americans, Samoa, Cook Islands up against New Zealand, and we'll no doubt update you on progress in the sports edition of Pacific Beat this time next week. Pacific Beat. Now, all eyes, as far as rugby league is concerned in Papua New Guinea, will be on the domestic competition tomorrow as the Digicel Cup finals get underway. Four clubs will square off in two elimination clashes. Well, the top two teams will have the weekend off before joining in next week to fight for a spot against this weekend's winners for a place in the decider. And as Kyle Evans reports, PNG's Prime Minister's 13 selectors will no doubt be paying close attention.
A premiership will be within reach for PNG's top rugby league clubs when the Digicel Cup finals kick off tomorrow. But with the Rugby League World Cup just over a month away, Mendy Maruk's head coach Roderick Puname says this year's grand final will also be a platform for national selection.
Given that if we get to the grand final, that's the place you want your players to be. Basically, even playing in the World Cup or just being part of that World Cup squad would be great for some of these boys. So, like, that's what we tell them all year. It's not just playing for our club and then going back home and all that. You just go look at further your rugby league career and all that. And like what we tell them is like the World Cup is the door for opportunities going outside. That's the place where you expose yourself to the rest of the world. So like, it's a personal sort of achievement for the players. So that's what we tell them to work towards. Like,
the Maruks are in the driver's seat to claim their first premiership in more than a decade, having finished atop the competition ladder. They will get a well-earned break this weekend before playing off for a spot in the decider in a fortnight's time.
It's 14 years from the last grand final win, and actually the last time we went to a grand final was in 2012, so that's like 10 years ago. But winning a premiership, it's 14 years ago. For me personally, it's quite special because I was part of the team that played the last grand final in 2012 and actually winning the last grand final in 2008. So I was a player back then, so hopefully I can take the team to another grand final now after 14 years.
This year's Cup carries extra weight for the six finals-bound teams after a difficult year off the field. Francis Ray, who coaches the second-place Rubal Gurriers, says violence fueled by the national election left some of his players rattled.
We went for 2 weeks break during the elections, and then some of our games were rescheduled because of the elections. Most of the boys here, they, especially the boys in Eastern Britain, they are not used to the aggression and or the style of, especially the people up in islands. Like I come from the islands, so we are used to, you know, a lot of problems and all that. But you know, it's a good challenge for the boys as well. Going out and playing in a atmosphere where it's really hard and tough, really, like it's bringing, giving them confidence to, you know, play in the final. So
the final series will mark the first for Ray, who was appointed to the top job with the Gurriers at the start of the season.
The Snake Tigers, they had the premiers last year, and they are also in the top four. Then you look at Hello Wickman and Manny Murrocks, they've been the form teams. Likewise, the Gurriers, so it's going to be a close battle between these four teams. So we're taking it one game at a time. So we're looking forward to the next week game and then hopefully all the way to the grand final.
In the build-up to the finals, Digicel Cup officials have been calling for more local players to be included in the Kummel squad to provide stronger support for the national competition. But their prospects look slim. The Kummel's head coach, Stanley Tepend, was previously in charge at Lae, and he knows it's tough for the locals to earn spots ahead of those playing in higher-profile leagues overseas. He's says Digicel Cup players will feature for the PNG Prime Minister's 13 against the Australians at the end of the month, but they're unlikely to make the cut for the World Cup.
What we have is we've got the PN's 13 in September 25th in Brisbane, so we're just looking at probably playing a couple of Digicel Cup players in that game rather than the actual World Cup. We'll use that as a trial before we travel to the World Cup. And we've got a lot of talent. It's just, for me, it can be a bit difficult because there's so many good players and I can only pick certain numbers. So it's good that the final start this weekend because most of the players that I picked that will be in the PM setting will come from the top two, top four teams. So it'll be, it gives them something to play for, a reward at the back of a tough year that they've had. And like I said, you know, we've got a squad of 24 that we'll bring to the World Cup. So if there's an absolute superstar in the making that may benefit from a 6-week camp in England, then we'll go with that. But otherwise, the Prime Minister's 13 will be the only game that I think the Digicel Cup players will be available for, or will be picked for.
PNG Kummel's coach Stanley Tepend and the reporter there, Kyle Evans. Pacific Beat, and it's more than 20 years since teams last competed for the Melanesian Cup, and during that time the world has changed somewhat to the point where those who have decided to revive the soccer tournament have been forced to give it a new name. FIFA not happy with the old name because it did not meet the world governing body's standards of political correctness, so now no mention of Melanesia in the title. Instead, say hello to the MSG Prime Minister's Cup. The tournament featuring last winners Fiji, Solomon Islands, PNG, New Caledonia and host nation Vanuatu will kick off in Port Vila later this month. And while the courts decide if Bob Loughman's decision to orchestrate the dissolution of Parliament was actually constitutional, Batik Bong, competitions manager for the Vanuatu Football Federation, says the soccer will go ahead regardless, and Mr. Loughman will have a role to play.
I can confirm to you that the Prime Minister's Cup will go ahead. The kickoff time was proposed by Mr. Bob Loughman, and he said he's confirmed to continue with the dissolution of the government of the Republic of Vanuatu, and does not affect our preparation, and the date starts from 17 to 30 of September.
And 5 teams due to take part, including Vanuatu and a Vanuatu development team. Those teams that are travelling to Vanuatu, have they all said they're coming?
Yes, every team, they are confirmed to sign a FIFA Tier 1 form to participate, because that tournament is a Tier 1 competition. So Fiji has already confirmed to participate and it's already signed, and also Papua New Guinea, New Caledonia and so Solomon Islands. They're confirmed to come to Vanuatu to participate in the MSG Prime Minister's Cup.
Does that mean, therefore, that all matches, I presume, other than those involving the Vanuatu development team, will count towards each team's world rankings?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. The Vanuatu development team is a Tier 2 competition. If a PA PNG play against Vanuatu Development Team, it's not a ranking. If Vanuatu 1 play against Papua New Guinea, it's the ranking. It's a tier 1 match.
And what's been the level of interest from the public in Vanuatu? Are you expecting big crowds for these games?
Yes, because now at the moment, the people from Vanuatu had expected to see the highest competition because, you know, in Vanuatu, the most people play soccer and they love soccer. And at the moment, we have the big preparation because the whole population, they join hands together because, you know, soccer is a powerful sport in Vanuatu.
And I would think for the Vanuatu teams, because, of course, there will be two in this tournament, for them in particular, this is a great opportunity because, of course, everything went rather badly for them at the World Cup qualifying tournament because of COVID-19 and they hardly played at all.
The main purpose of the competition is to, if Vanuatu is a host to face ever Prime Minister's Cup, it means that the next team, he have two teams, and if the next host, if New Caledonia or Papua New Guinea or Solomon Island or Fiji, then he have two teams too. One development team, because the purpose to have development team is to preparation for the 2026 World Cup qualifier.
And is the intention now that this tournament has been revived and reinvented, if I can put it that way, that it will be played for annually?
Yes, of course, because we request to FIFA and OSCE that they come to us, that it need to revive or to change the name of the competition, because it's not good for the FIFA, not need to mention Melanesian Cup. That is why all spirit group premises, they decide to change to revive the Melanesian Cup to MSG Premises Cup.
What was the objection to the original name from FIFA? What was their problem with that?
Discrimination. You know, he told us that discrimination, we need to open. They told us that is why they changed the name MSG Premises Cup, and revived the same competition, but they told us that you need to change the name.
And I'm just wondering, it's 22 years since the competition was last played, and a lot has changed in the world of soccer since then, particularly the women's game. Was there any thought given to having a women's tournament?
We have in plan. We put in plan that we already talking about, that with the next host, maybe we include the woman inside, because they have a strategy plan for qualify for the World Cup. So it's the same strategy plan like for the boys. We have in 2026, and the women's soccer for them is qualification is 2027.
So just to clarify, ideally you would have a men's and a women's competition side by side from next year?
Yes, I confirm.
And at this stage, do you know who is likely to host the cup next year?
All the premises from the member country, the Malaysian country, during the tournament, they hold the premises cups should be here to have a first meeting and decide the second host. All the premises from four member country, New Caledonia, Solomon Island, Fiji and Papua New Guinea, should be here the first week before kick off the competition. They have only a few days here and then they're back to their country.
I suppose that at this stage is that the irony that the one prime minister who may not be there is your own in Vanuatu, because currently, of course, you don't have a prime minister and you may not by the time the tournament kicks off.
No, we have caretaker. He should be here to welcome them in the airport. So no matter the dissolution, but, you know, in Vanuatu is like, not the PNG or Solomon Island, if they have a dissolution and they have to create a problem, and no, in Vanuatu is friendly, you know, smiling. We don't want to talking about the dissolution. We want to get together to have a highest competition. So we have already met with the caretaker prime minister and confirmed to us that everything should be okay.
So one way or another, Mr. Loughman will be involved, regardless if the political matters are still going through the courts?
No, it's not affected. It's okay. They have a case in the court, but football, the competition should continue because it's taken by one of the Football Federation and the organising committee.
Batik Bong, competitions manager for the Vanuatu Football Federation, the MSG Prime Minister's Cup coming up later this month. Now, time to touch base with our regular Friday contributor, sports writer and social media forum moderator, Tia Rocco, who on this occasion is just back from something of a sporting mission in Fiji. Tia, good morning to you.
Good morning and Pacific greetings from Darwin, Richard. Always great to be here again.
So you're back home from Fiji and you've had some pretty high-profile meetings while you were over there, not least with Simon Raiwaluhi, Fiji Rugby Union's high-performance general manager, talking about women's participation as players and leaders. So what did you come away with in terms of how women's rugby is faring in Fiji?
Yes, Richard, I was fortunate enough to meet with Simon Rawalui, who's the general manager for high performance. So the country is bustling with preparation for the Rugby World Cup for Sevens and also for the Women's Rugby World Cup in October. So I enjoyed a very candid conversation with the former Flying Fijians captain who commenced his role in February of 2020. And with the sacking of the three personnel in the organisation 2 weeks ago, he believed that this was not going to impact on the teams. And we also talked about how some exciting things and plans are ahead for Fiji Rugby in terms of the Australian Government Oz Sports Program funding, and of course with ongoing continuous support from World Rugby. In as far as the plight of women, which is my area of special interest, they're placing themselves administratively in a position where they're supporting and championing the cause of women throughout the organisation, and it looks like things are exciting ahead for the plight of women, Richard, within the organisation, and I was pleased to hear that.
You mentioned the Sevens at World Cup, which is coming up next weekend over in South Africa. You spoke to Siya Sifuli, the coach of the Fijiana Sevens team. I mean, that they must be in pretty good shape. He must be pretty optimistic about what they can do in the World Cup.
Yes, Richard, I had time to sit and have a chat to him. And, you know, this man is passionate about women's rugby. You will remember he started working, his journey working with Seni Serevakula in the NRC Fijian Drua team prior to being offered the coaching role with the women's sevens team. I loved his passion, his methodical approach to working with women on his team. He's a true advocate for changing the course of women's rugby in the country, always encouraging young women to take up the sport of rugby sevens and increasing the number of women's participation in rugby in Fiji. So the team will be travelling to South Africa as of today after being received and presented jerseys by the Prime Minister of Fiji, Frank Bainimarama, yesterday. You know, Richard, one of the things I really enjoyed talking to him about was the resilience of the women. And there was a team member there who had lost both parents not long ago that has become one of the fastest players Fiji will be likely to be producing at the World Cup meet over the next few days.
And, of course, beyond the Sevens World Cup next year, it's the Women's 15-a-side Rugby World Cup being staged in New Zealand. You mentioned Seni Serevakula there, who successfully coached Fijiana to win the Super W competition here in Australia at the first attempt. I mean, in terms of what the national side can do, I mean, again, he must be extremely optimistic about the impact that Fijiana could have at the 15-a-side World Cup.
Yes, certainly, Richard. And on the other hand, there has been calls after the Super W for Seni to step into the coaching the Flying Fijians for the next Rugby World Cup. So the notion is very much real and resounding on the ground wherever you go in Fiji. Even when talking to Fijian taxi drivers and farmers at the markets on Saturday morning, on a serious note, he has been touted across the forums, online forums, as doing this. Has this been a dream of his? The answer would be yes. But I wanted to capture his thoughts, Richard, about the Super W, and I wanted to go back to the beginning and ask him when he knew his team would win the competition, which he answered quietly that he knew the moment before they left the country, as he had instilled the thought within the team. And this is the very thought that they are taking into the Women's Rugby World Cup in October. So he talked a lot about working with the women and about his job being the most difficult in the world. And I don't blame him being surrounded by a team of women, Richard. But I especially liked how he talked about the winning mindset with high performance women and how resources since the Super W have come by easier instead of borrowed or hand-me-downs. So the women were training with the Fiji Navy when I left Fiji, Richard.
It's good to know. It's obviously they're being recognised for what they've achieved, although they shouldn't have had to work quite so hard to get that recognition. But just a quick word on rugby league, because I know you touched base with the FNRL, and the question of the Silktails playing in Fiji next season. Are we any closer to knowing whether that's going to be resolved or not?
No, nothing on that end, but I believe that they're still waiting on some formal confirmation or a letter of request from the New South Wales Rugby League. But things will begin to unfold, I believe, in the next couple of days.
Well, let's hope they could sort it out, because I'm sure if the Silktails turned up and played in Lautoka or anywhere else in Fiji for that matter, it would be quite an occasion. Tia, thank you so much for joining us. Sounds like a very successful mission for you over there in Fiji. Look forward to reading your subsequent writings to come, no doubt. Tia Rocker, they're a regular contributor here on the Friday morning sports edition of Pacific Beat. And that's it from this particular version of that programme. I'm Richard Hewitt. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Don't forget to join Jordan Fennell for the afternoon edition of Pacific Beat at 3:05 PNG time this afternoon. Pacific Review at various times over the weekend, and then Pacific Beat returns on Monday morning, 6:05 PNG time with Priyanka Srinivasan. In the meantime, I hope you have a very successful and enjoyable sporting weekend.